Peer, this is a rehearsal of the questions your team expects from Plurilock's executive team on Thursday, July 23rd, 2026. 17 questions, drafted answers, and a short follow-up move note on each so the shape of the exchange is familiar before the live session. Purpose: hear each answer aloud once so that when a question lands during Q&A, the answer is already sitting in the room. Here is how the episode is organized. First, a brief walk through the four people who will be in the room. Then the 17 questions in the same order the presentation itself unfolds. Customer strategy first, then operations, then workforce, then measurement, then strategic leadership, then governance, then the path forward. Each question is read in plain language, followed by the drafted answer, followed by one short line on the follow-up you would expect and how to handle it. At the end, a walk through the 7 pre-Thursday team huddle items so the team leaves aligned on the same list. Let me start with the four voices in the room. Manuel Viller, Managing Director of Plurilock's Critical Services Vertical and the Corporate Chief Information Security Officer. 25 years running security operations centers at federal, state, and commercial scale. A Raytheon veteran. Manuel opens conversations by asking whether the interviewer wants the answer the way it is supposed to be or the way things actually operate. He owns bid decisions, delivery leads, project managers, and the internal measurement program he is building from scratch. He will push back hard on any suggestion that the customer delivery system is not disciplined, because it is. He will concede without flinching on gaps he already knows exist. His defensive move is not denial. It is telling the room he is already working on the thing that was just named. Dave Glenn, Senior Vice President of Sales, joined about 9 months before the presentation date, which means when the diagnosis gets handed back, he is 9 months into rebuilding sales playbooks, building a qualification framework, and putting a strategic account motion in place. Talkative, storyteller, reaches for analogies. He is publicly supportive of the whole capstone process, because he has seen a similar case team engagement work well at a previous employer. He hears any critique of the sales system through the lens of the rebuild he is running. He needs the team to credit the work in flight before the diagnosis lands, or he will hear the diagnosis as dismissal of his rebuild. Veera Singh, Chief Financial Officer, owns finance and human resources, the 13-week cash runway, weekly accounts receivable and payable, live cash flow dashboards, the monthly management package, the semi-annual budget cycle, quarterly board reporting, the 30-item acquisition due diligence checklist, and the segregation of duties across the US and Canada. Measured, self-aware, comfortable describing things as ad hoc or as a work in progress without getting defensive, she asks whether things are documented and holds her own function to the same standard. She will hear the measurement and analysis finding through the lens of a scorecard she is actively building. Ian Patterson, Chief Executive Officer, founder CEO of Plurilock, owns capital allocation, board relationships, the audit committee escalation path, and the informal enterprise risk process. Released the Chief Operating Officer and Chief Technology Officer roles about 5 months before Team A started interviewing and pushed decision-making down to the three vertical leads. Analytical, articulate, comfortable naming trade-offs out loud. He will hear a project management office recommendation as consultants missing the point, because he watches Plurilock's clients get into trouble implementing enterprise resource planning systems and treats the no project management office posture as an advantage. He is unusually clean at self-identifying gaps, so what he wants from the team is not the diagnosis. He wants the design resource that would close the gap he already sees. Those are the four voices. Now the 17 questions. Question 1. Customer strategy. Segmentation is not yet a written system, but the qualification framework being built in the sales relationship system already codes different intake patterns for different verticals. Five Eyes gets one pattern, financial services another, healthcare a business associate agreement, and protected health information handling ask. That is not tacit. That is tagged inside the tool. What piece of Mora Cortez's four-activity segmentation process is actually missing beyond what is already being done? Answer: two pieces. First, the qualification work being built is real, and the finding names the improvement work already underway. What earns credit under the assessment framework is what exists and runs today, not what is being built out. Second, the specific piece Maura Cortez, Hoibjerg Clark, and Freytag lay out that is not yet in place is the pre-segmentation activity, where segmentation criteria get defined by differing customer requirements before customers get assigned, and the evaluation activity, where the segmentation scheme gets systematically reassessed on a cadence. The qualification tags in the sales tool today are effectively the implementation layer, with individual seller judgment upstream. The four-activity model is the shape of the whole loop, not just the middle two steps. Follow up. Expect a nudge on how much of the pre-segmentation piece could be handled by the current qualification framework if it were codified further. The right move is to agree that a codified qualification framework does much of the work, and name the leadership-level decision about which segments to intentionally pursue as the piece that has to sit above it. Question 2. Customer strategy, still segmentation. This is really a philosophical question about the finding. 9 months into a rebuild, is the team saying pause and rescope against the reference, or keep going and document as you go? Answer, keep going. The findings position is not a critique of the work in flight. It is a discipline that stops the assessment from crediting intent as capability. The design resources named in the presentation are there to shape what to build next inside the rebuild that is already running, not to replace it. Specifically on segmentation, the four-activity model from Maura Cortez gives the sales rebuild a checklist it can be structured against. An integrated project management company, on page 13, shows what the reassessment cadence looks like in practice at a firm at similar scale. Follow up, expect appreciation and a request for the specific handful of pages worth reading. The right move is to promise the pointer note by end of day Thursday, a note on tone for questions 1 and 2 together. These are the two questions where the framing move matters more than the content of the answer. Both come from the same person, in the same category, on the same finding. If the answer leads with the assessment framework's position and only afterward credits the rebuild that is underway, it lands as a correction. If the answer leads with the credit and then explains the framework's position, the same content lands as a partnership. Same words, different order. That sequencing is what the rehearsal is really about. Question 3, operations. The Focus 5 partner strategy is not picked because a salesperson sponsored a vendor. Partners get picked against 5 criteria: technical fit, strategic alignment, quality of relationship, services friendliness, and long-term positioning. Vendor neutrality underneath it all. Monchkos paper on strategic supplier alliances names roughly 7 predictors of alliance success, and the criteria as described sound like the same list. Is the opportunity that there is no formal selection process, or that the process just is not documented in a way somebody else could run? Answer, the second one. Monchka, Peterson, Handfield, and Ragetz surface roughly 7 predictors of alliance success. And among them, the existence of a formal, teachable selection process is one predictor alongside trust, information quality, and joint problem solving. Today, the 5 criterion lens lives with the senior vice president of sales role. The assessment question is whether the criteria are defined and repeatable in a way the firm carries through role changes, not whether the criteria themselves are wrong. If the codification lands and the vendor neutrality principle stays inside it, the diagnosis shifts. That is the design opportunity. Follow up. Expect a soft agreement combined with a question about how much codification is enough. The right move is to describe the standard as teachable to a successor and repeatable across engagements. Not exhaustive documentation. Question 4. Operations. In-process signal on delivery today is essentially just on-time delivery. Response time metrics, vetting rate metrics, and utilization tracking are being built to make the case for a proper ticketing platform. Neely and colleagues define a performance measurement system as the metrics that quantify efficiency and effectiveness at the process level. Which 2 or 3 in-process measures would earn their keep on a services engagement at Plurilock size? Answer. Neely, Gregory, and Platts define a performance measurement system as the metrics that quantify the efficiency and effectiveness of an organization's actions. they explicitly frame in-process measures as measures inside the work process rather than measures only at the outcome. The design resource does not name the specific three to pick. That is the redesign the firm owns. What the paper does give is the shape, a leading operational indicator that predicts a customer-side outcome. Stellar Solutions runs this at the process level on page 31. The metrics already being built, response time and vetting rate, sit inside that shape. There is a page number verification flag on the specific quote from page 1229 in the paper, so the pinpoint page reference is on the pre-Thursday huddle list. Follow up. Expect the room to want the specific metrics named. The right move is to name response time to first touch and vetting throughput as the two shapes that would satisfy the design intent without prescribing exact thresholds. Question 5. Operations on the planning strong point. The customer delivery planning is a strong point in the presentation, and it will be defended. But from having an idea to putting a statement of work in front of a customer, two of the delivery leaders can do it in 5 days. 5 days is not because the system is that good. It is because two experienced leaders are pattern matching from memory. Of the systematic piece being credited, how much survives if both of those people walked out tomorrow? Answer. The intake questionnaire, the level of effort and work breakdown structure templates, the statement of work template, the phase plan structure, the responsibility accountability matrix, the risk register, and the service blueprint all survive independent of who is running the desk. What travels with the two experienced leaders is the pattern recognition speed layered on top of that stack. The strong point claim rests on the artifact layer being repeatable and consistently applied across engagements. If a future redesign preserves those seven components, the discipline holds. The speed is a compounding advantage on top, not a substitute for the system. Follow up. Expect a satisfied nod, plus a passing worry about knowledge transfer risk from the two experienced leaders. The right move is to acknowledge the risk explicitly and note that documented artifacts are the mitigation, not a substitute for the people. There is a broader move worth naming here. When a strength gets defended in a session like this, the defender often expects a critique to be hiding inside the credit. The clean way to disarm that is to name what makes the strength a strength up front, name what would erode it if lost, and stop. Do not add caveats until the room asks. That is how a strength read stays a strength read, and it protects the trust that the customer strategy finding right before it needed to establish. Question 6. Workforce. The workforce cost strategy is try before you buy, roughly 80% contractor, with a conversion pipeline into full-time employment. Neither of the workforce findings as framed explicitly deals with a workforce designed to be contractor-heavy at the front and convert at the back. Does Lort's model handle a workforce built this way, or does it assume a headcount plus hire firm? Answer. Lort, Tors, and Tari propose a strategic workforce planning model for consultancies that connects anticipated demand to the size and composition of the future delivery workforce. The reference does not prescribe a full-time-only workforce. The construct is composition planning against demand, which is exactly what a contractor plus conversion pipeline is. What today is missing is the demand forecast side that lets the fractional chief revenue officer signal drive bench, sizing ahead of the engagement win. Stellar Solutions illustrates a companion pattern on page 24, with planned surge capacity through a standing part-time advisor pool for peak demand. That is the shape of the redesign. The 80-20 conversion logic can sit inside it. Follow up. Expect a question on whether the fractional chief revenue officer experiment already in motion counts. The right move is to credit the experiment as a demand-side pilot and note that the composition planning muscle it is building is exactly the demand forecast side the paper addresses. Question 7. Workforce. The HR function is essentially gone. Recruiting sits with department heads, plus agencies, plus the professional network recruiter tool. When the finding points to Wilden's framework on employer signaling, clarity, credibility, and consistency, what does signaling actually mean procedurally when there is no single owner of the employer brand? Does the model work with a distributed structure, or does it need one owner? Answer. Wilden, Gutergen, and Lings frame signaling as a way to shape the clarity, credibility, and consistency of what an employer presents to prospective candidates. The framework does not presume a single owner. It presumes a coherent signal. A distributed model can carry a coherent signal if the department heads work from the same articulated position on what Plurilock offers scarce cybersecurity talent. Integrated Project Management Company, on page 27, runs recruiting through a defined program where required skills get identified at the requisition stage and candidates get evaluated against the firm's culture through a multi-step interview. That is the shape at Plurilock scale. A talent acquisition specialist seat is one route to hold the coherence. It is not the only route. Follow-up. Expect a follow-up on whether a writ employer value proposition would be enough, or whether a single owner is still needed. The right move is to name the written value proposition as the substantive artifact, and the ownership decision as a separate call about who maintains it. Question 8. Measurement. The measurement setup already includes live cash flow feeds, 3-system reporting, the monthly management package, and a scorecard build in progress. When the finding cites Abernethy on causal performance maps, is the opportunity telling the CFO to add a formal mapping layer on top of the scorecard, or telling her the scorecard is not the right foundation? And does the method assume clean automated data feeds, or does it work off what managers already know while the plumbing is imperfect? Answer: a mapping layer on top. Abernethy, Horn, Lilies, Melina, and Celto describe a method for constructing causal performance maps from the operating knowledge managers already hold. The premise is explicitly that the maps get built from tacit knowledge, not from a clean data feed. So the scorecard is the right foundation, and the method fits Plurilock scale precisely because it is designed to start from what leadership already knows about how workforce affects operations, which affects customers, which affects financial results. The manual aggregation state today does not block it. The first version is a facilitation project, not a systems project. Follow up. Expect a question on how long the first facilitation would take. The right move is to name a couple of leadership sessions rather than months of engineering, and note that the sessions can happen while the scorecard build continues in parallel. There is a related move to prepare for. The chief financial officer may hear this finding through the lens of the scorecard build being not yet complete. It is worth saying explicitly that the finding is not a scorecard critique. The scorecard is the foundation the causal map layer sits on. The two projects are complementary, not competing, and the causal map facilitation can start before the scorecard reaches full maturity. That reassurance is worth offering unprompted. Question 9. Measurement on the liquidity and capital strong point. There is a treasury and capital strength that has been called out. Is there a peer-reviewed treasury or liquidity resource in the appendix that would recognize what Plurilock is doing at their scale, or does the strength hold up on the assessment criteria alone? Answer: the strength holds up under all 4 assessment criteria. The systematic dimension is covered by the 13-week cash runway, weekly receivables and payables, hurdle rates, sensitivity and scenario analysis, and the 30-item due diligence checklist. The learning dimension is covered by semi-annual budget revisions and post-acquisition cost reviews feeding future assumptions. The alignment dimension is covered by profitability and cash runway objectives tied to a board-approved strategy. The integration dimension is covered by treasury dashboards feeding the monthly management package and audit committee reporting. The team did not force a peer-reviewed treasury reference into the strength, because strengths do not require references under the assessment framework. What is worth preserving in any redesign is the specific composition. The 13-week horizon, the daily plus weekly cadence, and the segregation of duties across the US and Canada receivables and payables split. Follow-up. Expect appreciation and a possible question on whether the segregation model will scale. The right move is to name the split as a pattern that gets easier to maintain, not harder, as headcount grows. Question 10. Strategic leadership. There is deliberately no enterprise resource planning system and deliberately no project management office. Watching clients turn those into train wrecks is part of the reason. When the finding says leadership cannot see schedule, scope, and cost in one place, is the opportunity that the II connective tissue build is not done yet, or that even when it is done, it will not do what Meskindahl says a portfolio management system should do. And there is a sharper version. Does the framework give leadership a mechanism to arbitrate when a strategic initiative moves aside because customer delivery has to win this week? Answer: Meskindahl frames project portfolio management as the discipline that connects strategy to delivery. The construct is portfolio visibility and prioritization, not a specific organizational mechanism. A project management office is one implementation. An II connective tissue architecture that rolls departmental systems of record into a single leadership view is another. The finding is that the visibility and the prioritization mechanism are not in place today, whichever route the firm chooses. The sharper version of the same question is the arbitration layer between strategic initiatives and customer delivery. That is exactly the Connect Strategy to Delivery piece Meskindahl names. Stellar Solutions on page 9 illustrates a cadenced review that tracks performance against the strategic plan and periodically evaluates the planning process itself. Follow-up. Expect the room to test whether the team is quietly recommending a project management office anyway. The right move is to lead with the visibility and prioritization construct. Name the II connective tissue build as a valid implementation of it, and only cite Meskindahl by name after that framing has landed. This one is worth one more sentence of preparation. The reason the CEO's reflex on this topic runs so strong is that watching a client's project management office implementation go wrong is a very specific and very recent experience. Speaking to the construct, rather than the label, acknowledges that experience rather than fighting it. When Ian hears visibility and prioritization instead of project management office, he hears a diagnosis he agrees with, framed in language that leaves him room to keep the deliberate posture that makes his firm distinctive. That is what the team wants. Question 11, strategic leadership, appendix territory. Mission, vision, and values are well understood at the board and executive level, but there is no feedback mechanism to know if a first-day hire, confronted with a decision, actually uses those values as inputs. What is the mechanism-level recommendation? Not just the diagnosis. Answer. The finding sits in the appendix. The construct behind the deployment gap is that mission and vision reach the top of the organization through repetition, and the values are starting to inform human resources decisions, but no defined process today validates that any given business initiative aligns with mission or vision at the operator level. Design resources in this territory include a values-based decision filter embedded into the go-in-no-go gates that already run on both the customer strategy side and the operations side, and periodic mission, vision, and values alignment audits of a sample of operator-level decisions. There is a page verification flag on this one. The team did not cite a specific peer-reviewed values deployment paper in the deck body, so the appendix slide content is on the pre-Thursday huddle list. Follow-up. Expect a follow-up on how the audit would work without becoming performative. The right move is to describe it as reviewing a small sample of real decisions, not creating a separate compliance exercise. Question 12, strategic leadership on the acquisition-based initiative's strong point. This has been called a strength. Is the team reading those decisions as outputs of a systematic strategic initiative selection system, or as three individually good judgment calls that happen to line up with the screening factors after the fact? Some of the decisions were driven by tariff realities and by a large partner refusing to guarantee price on a specific federal deal. Where is the line? Answer. The assessment framework asks whether the approach is systematic, defined, repeatable, and consistently applied, not whether every input to a decision is scripted. The 30-item due diligence checklist plus board-level review plus growth strategy screening factors are the systematic approach. The tariff and partner price realities are inputs the approach handled. What lifts this from individual judgment to systematic approach under the four criteria is that the same design was used on the India divestiture, the hardware exit, and the completed acquisitions the team could see. If a fourth decision used a materially different process, the diagnosis would need revisiting. Follow-up. Expect a probing question on whether the sample size of decisions is large enough to call the pattern systematic. The right move is to concede that additional evidence would sharpen the read, and to name the consistency across the three decisions as the anchor. Question 13, governance, enterprise risk oversight. The informal process made two of the biggest calls of the last 18 months. The India divestiture and the hardware exit, both board visible through the audit committee. Is the finding that the informal process will not scale or that it does not work today? Answer, will not scale, plus one present state limitation. The systematic criterion asks whether the risk identification, weighing, and escalation process is defined and repeatable enough that the board sees a consistent picture rather than what the current escalation happens to surface. Today, the risk registry and the out-of-sequence audit committee escalation both exist, and the two decisions named show the informal process working. The present state limitation is that the escalation trigger is management judgment rather than a defined threshold, meaning risks that fall below one executive's radar are less likely to reach the board. The scaling concern is a compounding version of the same construct. Follow up, expect a question on what a defined threshold would look like in practice. The right move is to describe it as a small set of rules framed around materiality that any executive could apply the same way without additional judgment. Question 14. Governance, still. Gordon, Loeb, and Tseng. Presented as size matched. Is it really? If the recommendation ends up being to stand up an enterprise risk management function, that is the same conversation as the project management office one, and a sharper version. Nobody wants to build a Fortune 500-shaped risk stack on a 70-person company. Answer. Gordon, Loeb, and Tseng explicitly propose a contingency framework. The enterprise risk management design varies with firm size and complexity rather than prescribing a single organizational structure. At Plurilock scale, that means the design elements are a defined risk identification cadence, a defined escalation threshold, and a defined board-facing view. Not necessarily a full-time risk officer or a Fortune 500 committee stack. Integrated Project Management Company on page 9 illustrates a services firm that embeds risk assessment inside its planning process and escalates significant risks for executive review. The design intent is that shape at Plurilock scale, not a scaled-down version of Fortune 500 enterprise risk management. Follow up. Expect an interested pause and a question on whether the audit committee touchpoint could hold the design without any new structure. The right move is to affirm that it can, and name the escalation threshold rule as the smallest possible change that closes the gap. Questions 13 and 14 are close cousins. The first one asks whether the finding is about the future or the present. The second one asks whether the recommendation is size matched to the company. Both are variations of the same underlying concern, which is that the informal process has been working, and neither the CEO nor the head of operations wants to lose what makes it work. If both answers use the same underlying phrase, that the design elements are a defined risk identification cadence, a defined escalation threshold, and a defined board-facing view, the room can hold the whole picture in mind at once. Repetition of the core three elements is deliberate. It is the phrase worth having them remember. Question 15. Governance. No sustainability process, no sustainability report. By design, the industry and scale would make it unusual. There are substantive practices with teeth. Vacation usage monitoring, a diversity of thought hiring check, shuttered offices with an implicit environmental effect. Is the opportunity that Plurilock should be producing a sustainability report and setting formal goals, which would be politely disagreed with, or that the deliberate practices are not integrated into the leadership scorecard? Answer, the narrower reading. The sustainability opportunity is not whether Plurilock produces an external sustainability report. It is whether the firm's strategies, systems, and scorecard address economic, social, and environmental sustainability at the design level. The vacation usage discipline and the hiring diversity check are real substantive practices. Today, they are not visible in the leadership scorecard or the audit committee reporting. Making them scorecard visible is the design opportunity. Hubbard offers a resource on how organizations measure sustainability performance without overbuilding the reporting apparatus. There is a volume and year verification flag on the Hubbard citation, so the bibliographic detail is on the pre-Thursday huddle list. Follow up. Expect a satisfied acknowledgement and a possible question on what scorecard visible looks like in practice. The right move is to describe two or three specific measures that could be added to the leadership scorecard, framed as internal management tools rather than external reporting. Question 16, path forward. Across all 30 opportunities identified, every place Plurilock has deliberately chosen to operate without a formal process is a conscious trade-off. If the team had to name the single place where the opportunity cost of not building the mechanism is higher than the opportunity cost of building it, what would it be and why? Answer: workforce capability and capacity. It is the highest benefit item on the plotting matrix, and the one where the delivery-heavy critical services shift the firm has explicitly chosen at the strategic level creates a direct dependency. The two calls in the Just Do It quadrant, the causal map analysis in the measurement category, and the partner selection process in operations are lower cost and pay for themselves quickly. The genuine trade-off pressure is workforce capability and capacity. Without demand forecast composition planning matched to that strategic shift, the utilization firefight becomes the ceiling on the strategy. The design resource, Lort and colleagues 2019, fits at Plurilock scale. And the fractional chief revenue officer experiment already in motion is the right first step. Follow up. Expect a request for a rough timeline on the workforce build. The right move is to frame it as a 12-month build, sequenced after the two Just Do It opportunities, so the causal map layer is available to inform the composition planning. One more preparation note on this one. When the team names workforce capability and capacity as the single sharpest trade-off, the team is naming a finding that touches both the finance vertical and the operations vertical. The chief financial officer already has a fractional chief revenue officer experiment in motion. The head of operations is running the utilization firefight in real time. Neither of them owns the finding on their own. What is actually being named is a system-level finding that sits above both verticals, which is why it lands at the top of the trade-off list. If the answer names the joint ownership up front, it lands cleaner than if it looks like a critique of either vertical alone. Question 17. Path forward. The sequencing on the 12-month plan slide. Did dependencies drive the order or just cost and benefit? Two seems worth surfacing. First, enterprise risk oversight seems to depend on the causal map layer being built first, because that layer turns a risk registry into an oversight system. Second, if the firm invests in workforce capability while the workforce measurement strong point is already producing signals leadership acts on, is there a risk that the strong point gets rebuilt 6 months later? Third, is the causal map opportunity really a Just Do It, or does it depend on scorecard maturity first? Answer: two live dependencies, both worth naming inside the plan. The enterprise risk oversight opportunity does benefit from the causal map opportunity being underway. The causal map layer sharpens what escalates to the audit committee. That is why enterprise risk is positioned in parallel from day one rather than sequential first. The dependency is real, but the enterprise risk design elements can be scoped without waiting for the full causal map build. On the workforce capability question versus the workforce measurement strong point, the strong point measurement system is meant to be preserved. The workforce capability opportunity adds a demand forecast composition layer upstream of it. The redesign risk is manageable because the 70-30 individual scorecard weighting and the human resources dashboard are not dependent on how capacity is planned. On the causal map opportunity as a Just Do It, Abernethy's method builds from tacit managerial knowledge rather than a mature data feed, which is why it lands in the low-cost quadrant. The scoring is a plotting tool, not a priority ranking. Follow up, expect a probe on how confident the cost and benefit numbers actually are. That is a fair question and worth answering directly. The scoring is a plotting tool to make the shape of the choice visible, not a priority ranking, where the coordinate matters is at the extremes. Workforce capability at the high benefit, high cost corner is genuinely the highest benefit, most demanding item. The partner selection opportunity at the low cost, high benefit corner is genuinely the lowest cost, highest benefit item. Everything in the middle deserves the humility the numbers imply. That is the 17. Now the 7 items on the pre-Thursday huddle list. These are the things the team wants to align on before walking into the room together. First, the exact page pinpoint for the Neely quote on efficiency and effectiveness. Confirm the wording sits on page 1229 rather than a nearby page in the paper, and cite the primary statement rather than a restatement. Second, the design resource behind the Mission Vision and Values Last Mile Appendix slide. The deck body does not include this opportunity, so confirm what appendix slide gets pulled up and what design resource sits there. Ian is likely to ask this one directly. Third, the Hubbard Volume and Deere citation. Two secondary sources gave slightly different volume and deer listings. Align on which citation format to use if the reference gets tested. Fourth, the credit first discipline when the team hands back the customer strategy findings. Rehearse the segmentation answers so the framework's position lands after an explicit credit for the improvement work already underway. Without that credit first beat, the sales side will hear the finding as dismissal of the rebuild that is running. Fifth, the no project management office discipline when the team hands back the strategic leadership findings. Rehearse the portfolio management answer to lead with the visibility and prioritization construct. Do not lead with the author name. If the answer leads with the author name, the CEO's reflex is to hear a project management office recommendation coming, and by the time the caveat lands, he may have stopped listening. Sixth, the Aurora One entity, East and West Divisions language on the entity structure slide. Faculty roleplay feedback flagged this earlier, and it has already been implemented, but confirm the slide reads as intended before the room. Getting the entity structure wrong in front of the chief financial officer is a small mistake with a big cost. Seventh, the Manuel cross-touch on the causal map opportunity. There is a natural bridge between the in-process measurement work being built and the causal map layer that reads across departments. If it comes up in the room, that bridge is a graceful move to make the measurement finding feel joint across the operations and finance verticals, rather than solo on the finance side. That is the huddle list. Seven items, most of them small, one of them a rehearsal discipline that matters more than any single citation. One rehearsal note before closing. The four voices in the room will not be alone. Two members of the internal team will be present, but not speaking during Q&A. One is the delivery lead inside Pluralock, who has been the test of whether artifacts actually mean what the diagnosis says they mean. The other is Jason Valiant Saunders, who has kept the team honest throughout. If the room references either of them mid-question, the move is to name them briefly, acknowledge their contribution, and keep the answer moving. Do not put either of them on the spot during the session. That has been the plan since the team scoped speaker attribution. Close with this. The 17 questions are the ones with the highest weight based on what the transcripts and the earlier faculty reviews surfaced. The actual room will land on some of them and not others. What matters is not that the team predicted the right 17. What matters is that the team walks in with the substance behind every finding organized cleanly enough that whatever comes up, the answer is already sitting in the room. That is what this rehearsal is for. If a question comes up that this rehearsal did not cover, the discipline is the same as it has been across the whole project. Frame the diagnosis around the design of the method, not the output. Reference the peer-reviewed source as a design resource, not as justification. Pair it with a real Baldrige example at similar scale, and keep the language non-prescriptive. That set of moves applies to every question, retained or unretained, that lands during the session. One final piece of self-preparation. Between now and Thursday, the highest leverage rehearsal is not memorizing answers. It is running the first two beats of each question out loud in the order. They will land in the room. Question one, then question two, then question three in that order. Because it is the sequencing that trips a live conversation up more than the content of any single answer. If the segmentation credit first move works cleanly, the segmentation follow-up works cleanly, and the partner selection answer that comes right after works cleanly, the whole customer strategy segment holds together. If any of them lands sideways, the recovery on the next question is the piece worth practicing. That is the sequencing muscle that turns a good preparation into a good session.